Welcome to Parents' Perspective. It's a miracle, Marcia was telling Celia over their grocery carts. Carrie doesn't whine anymore when her brothers want to use the computer. You don't think they've worked out some kind of bribe? Celia smiled. It's been known to happen with my gang. No, Marcia replied. I think something must have happened at camp. She came home sort of changed, maybe a bit more patient. She looks at me when I talk to her. I think she's really listening these days. Whoa, Celia's eyes opened wide. That's a big deal for a 13-year-old. I'd find out what they fed them at that camp. I'd like to feed it to my whole family. From a parent's perspective, what are the interpersonal skills we call emotional intelligence, and how can a summer camp experience help our children develop them? I'm Sandy Burt. Linda Perlis could not be with us today. She will return soon. Our guest today is very familiar with developing emotional intelligence skills in youngsters. Greg Cronin is president of GC Training Solutions with over 30 years' experience in organized camping. He's a certified camp director through the American Camp Association, and for the past 20 years, he's been a camp staff training consultant who works with organizations helping people to understand emotional intelligence and how it can be fostered both in and out of the camp environment. Greg also writes frequently in Camping Magazine and is featured in the American Camp Association's new book series, By the Experts. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Greg.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
What is emotional intelligence and why is it so important?
Emotional intelligence has as much to do with how children grow as how they succeed. Emotional intelligence encompasses the skills of self-awareness, self-control, empathy, the ability to wait, like delayed gratification, the ability to listen or cooperate or share, and how they work well with others. And they're finding that these traits in children has a lot to do with how they succeed when they get to be older.
Isn't this funny? I'm thinking of that book, Everything I Always Wanted to Know I Learned in Kindergarten.
That's right. There's a lot to that. That's exactly right.
And it is interesting because we are so focused on academic skills that we sometimes forget that if you have academic skills in a vacuum and you don't know how to relate to other people, it sort of doesn't do you very much good.
That's right. And actually, camps are the perfect metaphor for how children actually begin to learn vital life skills. In fact, when I do trainings, we sort of call them lifelong learnables. And we create this fantastic magic through activities where the kids actually learn the lifelong learnables, except they don't know it when they're going through it. And that's what makes it really fun for them.
Could you explain how a sleepaway camp can nurture these emotional intelligence skills?
When children go to both day camp and resident camp, they're actually in a group environment. They're actually in a community. And in that community, besides sleeping and eating, there are activities that they do, some which they like and some which they're learning to like. And as that process goes on, the camp staff has a greater advantage than anybody else because of the way that the kids interact while they're at camp. So while they're doing activities in camp, the camp staff get a chance to know the kids, their habits, what they like, what they don't like, and they can use the activities as a vehicle to get the kids to grow in a school setting. There's a lot more pressure for the kids to achieve academically at a certain rate, or teachers are under the gun to follow the curriculum that they have. And there's obviously time constraints there. And at camp, there's a lot more freedom in the scheduling to work on activities where while the kids are struggling, they can stop, they can help, and they can actually work through some of the emotions that the kids are having during the activities. And we call those teachable moments where the counselors can just stop and work with a child on a specific skill or a feeling that they're having, which was brought out by the activity.
And that presupposes that there's a pretty good ratio between camper and counselor, right? What would be the ideal ratio?
The ideal ratio actually in a camp changes dramatically with the activity that's being offered. And one of the things that parents sometimes struggle with through no fault of their own is that in school there are just so many children in a classroom and usually there's one teacher. It's really hard for that teacher to be able to get around and sort of do all of the academic requirements and then also be there for each child. In a camp situation, you have a lot of staff, and as the degree of difficulty of the activity increases, so does the supervision. So a lot of times, for example, in horseback riding or on a high ropes course, you might have a one-to-one situation, whereas if you're eating or maybe you are having an activity like arts and crafts, which is not so physically threatening, you might have fewer staff per camper, but you always have usually in the neighborhood of one staff for every 6 to 8 campers in a non-structured situation. And in a structured situation, it could be as little as 2-to-1 or 1-to-1, depending on how difficult it is.
So that's something that parents should be aware of when they're choosing camps, the ratio of counselors to campers.
Right, that's correct. And sometimes even in camps, because the staff has all day to be with the kids and listen to the kids, it's really phenomenal the relationships that the kids have with the staff, because the staff really act as role models and they're there to listen to the kids. And that's an environment that most kids just don't have very often. So they really thrive in the camp environment because of all the personal attention that they can get.
Does this model hold true for camps that are theme camps, like computer camps or camps where you go for certain kinds of skills?
Yes. The camps that specialize in one activity or another usually combine that with other activities which give the kids almost an opposite experience. So sometimes you might have a camp that specializes in computers, but they might have a strong athletics program, or you might have one that's based on outdoor activities like ropes courses and canoeing, but they'll also have things like woodworking or perhaps even things like chess, where you can have an equal and opposite emotional or even interpersonal experience.
Okay. What's the difference between a child's learning teamwork, delayed gratification, and all those kinds of things as a member of a soccer team or Girl Scouts or something and learning these things in camp?
Well, Daniel Goleman is a clinical psychologist who wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence, and he actually makes two really important assertions. The children whose emotional intelligence skills are well developed tend to be more successful at school and have deeper and healthier relationships, and they actually grow up to have very fulfilling lives. And that was the first assertion that he made. Now, the second assertion was that he discovered that these skills can actually be taught. And so children can learn and practice these valuable skills under the guidance of well-thought-out adults. And that's exactly what happens at camp.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on how camps can help improve our children's emotional intelligence.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back. We're talking with Greg Cronin about how a summer camp experience can help foster greater emotional intelligence skills for our children.
I think that teaching these life skills is something that quality camps do as a matter of practice. And so what happens is that during activities, let's say like archery, where people think, wow, this is just simply shooting a bow and arrow, but there's really a lot more to it than that. And so when you begin to think about, wow, in order to really be effective at archery, you have to understand the equipment, you have to follow safety procedures, you have to listen to directions. You have to follow a sequence of events. You have to practice body control. And then there are independent variables like the wind or somebody talking to you. There's a whole concentration factor. And then, of course, people still try to hit the target. And so as a matter of practice, when the kids go through this process, they actually see that the activities are fun, and they actually begin to gain self-confidence and a self-awareness by gaining skill, which they didn't think that they could do. Now, in school, it's a very different paradigm in that you can actually go to class and do your work. And if the teachers have time, because teachers are very hardworking, they don't always get a chance to do all that they would like to do with the kids. And so the kids don't always show all of their sides in school. Sometimes it's somewhat guarded or protected. And in camps, particularly in resident camps, when they're there 24 hours a day, it becomes a living situation. And over time, they let down their guard. And that's when the real learning occurs.
It's interesting. I'm reminded of a quote, which I'm afraid I'm going to really massacre, by somebody very famous, whose name, of course, I forget, who said something like, you know, my grandfather started out to teach me about whittling, but he really taught me about life.
Yeah, and I'm reminded of a story when I was first a counselor many years ago at a resident camp. And on about the second day of camp, I went up and I saw these two little girls on a bench, and they were crying. And I went over to them and I asked what the matter, and they didn't want to speak to me at all because, of course, I was a stranger. So I sat there for a long time, and as we began to chat, I realized, wow, they're homesick. Well, one of the girls got called by her counselor, and she got up to leave, and I was sitting there with the other one, and I didn't know what to do. I was a young counselor. So I actually sat there, and finally I saw the nurse come by, and I waved her over, and between the two of us, we sort of got her to admit that, yes, she was kind of homesick. And I said, you know, this is my first time at camp too, and I'm a little homesick. So we sort of formed a bond. And through the rest of the summer, we got along. And I was actually the waterfront director. So she came down and I got her in a boat, and she became very comfortable with being at camp. Well, about 10 years later, I was back at that camp and I was doing some training, and I was telling a story about something that I had done there. And this woman comes up to me and she says, I know you. And I said, really? I haven't been here in a long time. And she said, well, you may not remember me, but I was a really homesick 6-year-old little girl, and you were the only one that stopped to talk to me. Now, this is 10 years later. She picked me out of a crowd.
Oh, my.
So the validation for what we do at camp is spectacular.
What kinds of changes have you seen in campers who've been able to develop greater emotional intelligence skills besides growing up to be self-possessed women who pick you out of crowds?
Well, I have a lot of conversations with parents, and parents are really amazed at the progress that their kids make at camp, even if they're only there for a short period of time. And one of the great things about day camp is that you get very consistent feedback from the parents. And a lot of times they'll just come up and they'll say, it's amazing over the first week of camp that my son has come home and he's just a nicer person, or he's really learned how to share with his brother. And I think summer camps really work hard to train staff in modeling and teaching the fundamentals of emotional intelligence. When camp directors hire staff, they don't just hire staff for the skills and abilities that come in on a resume. That's one of the really key points, I think, that quality camps have, is that the directors are very cognizant about making sure that the collection of skills and abilities that their staff have collectively will actually be able to produce quality product that will support the camp's mission. And I think that through this role modeling that the staff do for the campers, they're actually able to relate to the kids in a much different perspective than most teachers. First of all, they're closer in age. So the kids relate to them a lot easier than they do older adults. I mean, that's the first thing. The second thing, I think, is that counselors are with the kids all the time, like when they eat, when they sleep, during transition times, say between regular activities and special events. And teachers don't have that sort of luxury of time that camp staff do. And so collectively, I think that in camp, the adult role models have an opportunity to work with kids on perseverance and listening and teamwork and sort of appreciation for differences, cultural, linguistic differences, and I think also in just the different personalities that kids have. And there's some very interesting outcomes that come from this. And when we talk about leadership development in terms of emotional intelligence, camps that have counselors and training programs, as the campers become too old to be campers, they can transition into the positions of the staff that they've long admired. And so they go through things like leadership, philosophy, their role in how the camp works, how to teach a lesson, how to participate in a special event, how to help somebody who's homesick. All these things are actually being taught in leadership development in camp, and the staff then can help them practice in a carefully designed, child-oriented world. And so I think that's a real key component, because now one of the manifestations of how we live today in our instant gratification world is that the kids are really not learning these fundamental skills, things like learning how to stand in line or being patient or learning how to make friends. That's a really difficult thing now for children to learn, because they spend a lot of time in front of a computer screen, because they're spending so much time on Facebook or MySpace. And it's a learned skill to be patient, like standing in line, or how to share. And one of the great things about camp is when you see kids down at the lake and they're fishing, well, they might only have one fishing pole. So in order for them to get along and to both fish, they have to learn how to share or put worms on a hook. It's those sort of simple things, or toasting a marshmallow over a fire when they only have one stick, you know, and they have to sort of go back and forth. Those are really important moments at camp.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on how camps can help improve our children's emotional intelligence. For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Greg Cronin about how a summer camp experience can help foster greater emotional intelligence skills for our children. What can parents do to continue fostering these skills at home? Maybe only have one fishing pole, one stick for the marshmallows.
Yeah, when campers return home from camp, parents really need to keep building their summer skills. And one of the really common sense ways to do this is the chores that the kids do around the house. Now, you may think, well, you know, they were doing those before they went to camp. But it's all about the process of how they do them and to the degree in which they do them. Because I know when I was growing up, like cleaning my room was certainly not the same standard that my mom had.
Uh-huh.
And when I came back from camp, it was amazing, because now I was responsible for if their beds were made, or we have things called cubbies at camp where kids actually store all of their worldly possessions, including their clothes and stuff that they bring. And the cubbies are really hard things to keep neat. So I think that parents who model sort of working together as a family to get jobs done are really reinforcing vital lessons that are learned at camp. And this also can be true, I think, when kids play sports. I mean, sports is one of those really double-edged swords that we deal with in today's society. And I think it's a really key point for parents to be able to translate some of these really important lessons that they learn at camp, even when the kids are doing things that they're passionate about, like playing sports. I mean, one of the things about playing sports today is that they're often in very planned activities. They're very regimented. And sometimes kids forget that playing the sport just for the sake of playing the sport because it's fun is sometimes overlooked. And at camp, while we do have a lot of competition, we also carefully teach the values of playing. And because we can do that in a fun environment, the simple joy of working together on a team is really one of the fundamental things that happens in a camp situation.
Do you see a follow-up when you have this philosophy and this wonderful civilization that camp becomes all by itself and the kids leave? Do you see the philosophy go with them and stay with them, or is it really left back in Brigadoon?
It's a magical time that happens there because of the growth and development that occurs teaching emotional intelligence. Now, parents can build a year-round program in their homes for teaching emotional intelligence. And I think that one of the ways that they can do that is to encourage the kids to talk about their experiences at camp. A lot of times you have that typical conversation where parents will say, "Oh, well, what'd you do at camp?" "Nothing." You know, "How was your time there?" "Oh, it was okay. It was fine." "Well, something must have happened. You were gone for 4 weeks or 8 weeks." "Oh, yeah, we had a good time." And if parents actually ask some probing questions, they'll start to hear all kinds of wonderful stories about friendship and about skill development, about exciting things they did down at the lake or on stage or in the pottery barn. You can build on those things by trying to get the kids to duplicate some of those kinds of experiences at home that they did at camp, like planning their own activities or not just having friends over, but, okay, what are they going to do when they get there? What did you do at camp when you were having activities with kids? What made you happy? How did you feel about that? And if you ask some probing questions like that, the experiences at home, you will actually find that the kids open up. And it's sort of all in the way that you ask the questions.
Are there certain kinds of questions we can ask?
Yeah, there are some really good things that you can use. When they come back from camp, they're going to have more stories than they have time to tell. And so as they unravel, you sort of want to use phrases that will trigger those responses. So I like to try to get them to use words that cause them to talk about how they feel about something. Like a good example might be when a child is talking about an experience they had at camp, not just say, "Well, how did you feel about that?" But you can also ask follow-up questions like, "Oh, well, when you and your friend were talking about that, what caused you to do what you did?" Boys actually will do it better if you include an activity while they're doing it, because boys are just really much more comfortable in telling you what they know while they're doing an activity. Girls are a little bit more wanting to sit down and talk about their feelings and emotions without too much asking on a parent's part. One of the other things is to ask, "Well, if you hadn't done that, what would it have been like for you?" And a lot of times you'll get answers that will sort of surprise you in that the kids a lot of times want to push the rules to the limit, but they still want to sort of feel like they're getting away with something. In reality, it's the counselor's ability to allow them to grow and develop, giving what's age appropriate for them. And at home, you can sort of duplicate that. You can actually set goals with them that have to do with how they feel about something. And what you want to do is you want to kind of get feedback from them as you go along to sort of, "How am I doing?" Now, some people sort of use a 1 to 10 sort of scale and say, "Well, you know, that thing we did last weekend, how was that on a scale of 1 to 10? Did you really like that? Was that fun for you? You know, and if so, why?" And one of the things that people do is they have to realize that sometimes the first answer that you get maybe not be the true answer.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. You might have to be patient, which, of course, is modeling the emotional intelligence that you're trying to get from them.
Well, we have to model some emotional intelligence here and begin to wrap up, unfortunately. But before we do, what resources would you recommend for parents who would like to learn more about this whole topic of emotional intelligence and camps?
There's an article called Emotional Intelligence 5 Years Later by Daniel Goldman. There's also another article, Welcoming Spirit into Our Schools by Gary Tubbs. David Dunning wrote a very nice article called Leadership in the Millennium. I have some recommended reading about the emotional intelligence of children. Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child was written by John Gottman. And Gail Kushner wrote The Key to Success, Developing Emotional Intelligence in Young Children. I think parents will find some of those to be very helpful.
Well, you have been very helpful in pursuing this whole topic. We're so glad you could be with us today, Greg Cronin. Thanks so very much.
Thanks for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 395. Spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. And tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice as a podcast. That's www.parentsperspective.org. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners and the Evelyn Sachs Trust. Thank you so much. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.